All set to start.
Hey, Mike, it's all yours.
Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Mike Bartley. First of all, I just want to thank all of you for getting on the call this morning. I know that the last 3.5 months have been an incredibly trying time for everyone, and appreciate all of your commitment to the SRC and fulfilling our mission by having you participate in this meeting today via teleconference. Today is my first meeting as your chairperson, and I am going to be trying to fill the giant shoes of our very capable and dedicated former chair, Alan Gunsberg. So please bear with me today, as I'm sure I'm going to make more than my fair share of rookie mistakes. So I thank you for your patience in advance in putting up with me. As you guys all know, telephone meetings can be challenging at times, since we're not all in the same room. So in order to try to maintain some sense of order, I'm going to ask that if you'd like to make a comment on something, if you could please start by simply identifying yourself before you make the comment, so that we will know who's talking. And hopefully that will make things go a little bit more smoothly. Also, just a friendly reminder that today's meeting is being recorded. So for starters, I'd like to ask that each of the SRC members who are on the call this morning identify themselves. Then I'm going to ask that the BESBE staff that are on the call to identify themselves. And then we'll see if there are any members of the general public that are participating in the call as well. So if we can start by having the SRC members simply identify yourselves one at a time, that would be great. So whoever would like to start can go ahead.
I'll start. Scott Becker from Chris Radio.
Deb Reed from the National Federation of the Blind of Connecticut.
Jay Brown from the Department of Education.
Dawn Russell, Bessie Client.
John McNichol, Bessie Client.
Lucretia Jones, a member.
Gary Allen, Bessie Client, and representing SILC, State Independent Living Council.
Eileen Rose, member, representing the Southeast Connecticut Community Center of the Blind.
I guess I can introduce myself. Anita Mendoza, vocational rehab counselor, assistant counselor.
Mary Burgard, voc rehab supervisor.
Ryan Sigmund, BESBE director.
I thought I heard Nate
Barnes. Any other SRC?
Is Nate Barnes up?
You go ahead.
I thought I heard Nate Barnes.
Yes, I'm here.
Nate Barnes, okay. And
Are there any other SRC members or BESBE staff that have not identified themselves yet?
Oh, this is Daryl back here at BESBE recording.
Thanks, Daryl.
Okay, yep.
Anybody else? Somebody else just
Hi, it's Kendra. Sorry for my delay.
Hi, Kendra.
Hello.
Thanks for being on with us today.
Absolutely.
So I think we have everybody. So are there any members of the general public on the call this morning that would like to identify themselves?
Mary Ann Nelly, president of the National Federation of the Blind of Connecticut.
Great. Thanks, Marianne.
You're welcome.
Any other members of the general public? Okay, I think we've got everybody. Thank you for that. So we'll go ahead and move on to the public comment section of the meeting. So we recognize the fact that there may be members of the general public who want to comment on the VR policy for personal adjustment programs. If there is, I'm going to ask that you hold your comments until a little bit later on in the agenda when we are going to take up that specific topic. And I promise that we will give you the chance to weigh in on that topic after the SRC members are done commenting on that. So at this point in time, I'm going to open up the meeting to any public comment on topics other than the VR policy for personal adjustment programs. So are there any public comments on any other topics? Okay, I'll make one more appeal. Any public comment for on any topics other than the VR policy for personal adjustment programs?
Actually, yes, this is Deb Reed. Okay. I just would like to ask a question at this point. How many orientation and mobility instructors do we have?
Brian, would you like to take that on?
In children's services, right now we do, and in adult services, right now, I believe we have three.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment on any other topic? Okay, hearing none, we will move on to old business. Hopefully everyone has had the opportunity to review the minutes from the last meeting on March 25th, 2020. If so, then I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes of that March 25th meeting. Do we have a motion to approve those minutes?
Motion.
Is that Nate Barnes?
Yes.
Thank you, Nate. Do we have a second?
This is Lucretia
Jones. Sorry, Lucretia.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that second, please?
This is Lucretia Jones. I second.
Okay. So we have a choice here. Lucretia, I'm going to go with, I heard your name more clearly, so I'm going to say we'll take yours as the seconding that motion to approve the minutes. All those in favor of approving the minutes from the March 25th meeting?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Any opposed? Please say nay. Okay. Any discussion? Okay. Looks like the ayes have it. So the motion to approve the minutes from the March 25th, 2020 meeting passes. Thank you all for that. So we are going to move on to the work group reports. And we are going to start with Nate Barnes. And before Nate gives his update, I just want to alert everybody to the fact that this is Nate's last meeting today. His term with the SRC is ending. And so I just want to take a minute to thank Nate for his dedication to the SRC and for your leadership, Nate, in overseeing the membership committee. So. Speaking on behalf of the entire SRC, we wish you all the very best in everything that you do from this point going forward, and thank you for your commitment to the SRC. So at this point, you can feel free to go ahead and give us the membership update if you're ready.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure to serve on this committee. Y'all taught me a great deal about how things are ran on legislation, so I appreciate the learning experience that I got from you guys. Unfortunately, Brian, I need you to read it because my charger for my computer is at the studio. I thought I put it in my bag, but I didn't. So if you can help me out with that.
I do have it here. Is everyone able to hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just great. I just wanted to be sure. Since our last council meeting, Brandy Altergott has been appointed to the SRC, represents a lawyer category. We also have vacancies now in the category still of one employer to replace Lori Bartolucci. Have a vacancy to replace Kathy Marioni from the Workforce Investment Board. Have one vacancy in the category of community rehabilitation provider to replace Steve Famingletti. And there is a candidate whose resume is with the governor's office. We need to have a replacement in the client assistance program to replace Linda Mizzi, and they have identified a candidate to replace her, and that candidate has been given the contact information at the governor's office. And we have a vacancy to replace Alan Gunsberg, and there is a candidate whose resume has been sent to the governor's office. That's the membership report.
Thank you, Brian.
Great. Thank you, Brian. So we will move on then to the Finance Committee report. Scott, would you mind giving us that report?
No, sure. These are committed amounts since October of 2019. SRC, the satisfaction survey, that was October of 2019, for $23,606. NFB Newsline, also in October of 2019, that was in the amount of $24,350. We had dues for the National Council of State Agencies for the Blind, that was February of this year, for $990. Dues for the Council of State Administrators of Vocational Rehab, that was in May of this year for $3,316.56, and a laptop computer for the tech lab in June of this year for $1,598. Grand total there, $53,860.56.
Great. Thanks a lot, Scott. Does anybody have any questions for Scott and Brian around around our finances? No. Okay. Thank you, Scott.
Yep.
We will go ahead then and move on to the consumer satisfaction update, and I think probably Brian and I can sort of tag team on that one. Nothing has happened since the last meeting around the customer the review of the customer satisfaction survey. You guys will remember that significant work was done probably a year ago on this topic, but nothing has happened since the last meeting as a result of COVID-19, and I think from my conversation with Brian, I think we were thinking that this probably isn't the time to take that subject up due to all the other competing priorities. So I think the game plan for customer satisfaction would be to kick this can down the road a little bit further. And Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, we've got quite a bit of time still before we have to sort that out, correct?
Well, this will be based on the priorities of the SRC. You actually don't have any time frame in the federal law for revising the survey instrument. So you aren't under a time constraint to revise the instrument.
Okay, good. Okay. Any comments or questions or concerns around the customer satisfaction work group? No. Okay. All right, thank you all for that.
Would you like?
We have a couple of new. Yep, we have a couple of new people jumping on.
Andrew Norton has just joined.
Hi, Andrew.
Hello.
Thanks for joining. Anybody else just jumped on? Just Andrew, I guess. Okay, thank you.
Oh, sorry, Tara Brown Ogilvie, Helen Keller National Center.
Oh, hi, Tara.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. So at this point, I think we're ready to move on to new business. We do have a VR success story today that I think Mary Burgard is going to be putting forth, but that person is not available to call in until around 11:30 a.m. So we're going to table that for the time being. And Mary, let me know when that person has called in, and we'll make a point of getting around to them, okay?
I definitely will. It's actually Crystal Kelly, one of our VR counselors, will be joining with her about, I think she said between 11:30 and 11:40, so.
11:30 and 11:40. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, okay.
So then we'll go ahead and move on to the comprehensive needs assessment update, which Brian is going to provide to us this morning. Brian?
Okay, so the SRC did authorize us to utilize Central Connecticut State University Center for Public Policy and Social Research to once again do the comprehensive needs assessment. This has to be done once every 3 years, so it is due to be completed by the end of December of the calendar year. and they have submitted a proposal for $17,833.37. This is in keeping with what they've charged in prior years. It's actually a relatively reasonable fee given the amount of labor that is required for them to do the comprehensive needs assessment. Again, since you've already, as an SRC body, motion utilize them, I just wanted to let you know that once we receive the proposal, I am in the process of finalizing a draft memorandum of agreement to move that through the internal contracting process of the agency so that they would be able to initiate the survey, I mean the needs assessment. At this point, perhaps might be worthwhile to discuss whether or not we want to take it up at this meeting or at the meeting in September is to the next consumer satisfaction survey. You know, again, over the years, we've had some discussions around whether there would be some other entity out there that might be able to take on that survey, and then talked about, you know, the various methodologies by which surveys get done in today's world. But this was also all pre-COVID, I think, as Mike has indicated, with everything that is going on right COVID. I will leave it to the pleasure of the SRC what you, but keep in mind, starting in October, we would need an entity in place for the survey, particularly if you wish to continue with the methodology now, which is that for each federal fiscal quarter is completed, the surveyors are calling the clients that were inactivated in the quarter that just ended so that the survey calls are coming much sooner than what had occurred in prior years. So again, you can either choose to defer any action on this till the September meeting, or if you feel you want to take up that topic now. The only reason I bring it up under the comprehensive needs assessment is for the last, I don't know how many years, it's been many, maybe 7 or 8 years, the Center for Public Policy and Social Research has been doing the comprehensive needs assessment and the consumer satisfaction survey. So they roll the results of the survey into the needs assessment, which makes for a relatively, you know, seamless report. But it doesn't necessarily have to stay that way. If other entity did the surveying, then, you know, whoever did the next needs assessment would still have access to that data since it is public information.
So, Brian, this is Mike Bartley. So is this the point in time where we need to decide either at this meeting or the September meeting whether we want to stick with CCSU for the time being?
I would say that either this meeting or the September meeting at the latest, a decision needs to be made as to what entity you want to utilize. Now, whether we stay with this particular vendor, state agency, or you go elsewhere, just keep in mind that there is a contracting process. So I would probably recommend that if there's time at this meeting to deliberate it on it now, it would probably be, from a time frame perspective, more advantageous to know now whom you want for the survey. It would start after October 1, but if you choose to defer it to September, which is certainly the SRC's choice, just recognize that the contract will take some time to get in place, regardless of who the vendor is, whether it's the current one or a different one, and that means that you may not be able to pick up the first quarter surveys until possibly, let's say, December. it'd still be doable, and it would still be within, you know, a reasonable time frame after the cases were inactivated. But I just wanted you to, you know, have basically all the information.
Okay, thank you. This is Mike again. And so I know this has come up in discussion in previous meetings, and we've tried to kick around or solicited ideas around other potential vendors that would be able to do this type of work, but it seems like correct me if I'm wrong on this group, but it seems to me we have not been able to successfully identify any other entity that would be able to do this that I'm aware of. If I'm forgetting someone, please let me know that. In fact, I think I had suggested UConn at one point, but then we struggled to identify who the contact person was that we had utilized at the Department of Labor many years ago. And I know we had talked about possibly doing some sort of electronic survey. That had been kicked around among the customer satisfaction group. But it seems like time is of the essence here. I do think that we have time in today's meeting to deliberate this, so this might be a good chance to spend a few minutes talking about this. So at this point, I'd like to open it up to anybody else's suggestions around what direction we'd like to go in here. So anybody have any thoughts on this?
John Carnavola here. My question would be, what advantage would we expect to see from switching vendors? Brian covered the one we get from maintaining work with CCSU, which would be they combine the reports. So what gain would we see from looking to switch vendors?
Personally, off the top of my head, I can't think of any net gain in switching vendors. I could see only challenges probably in switching vendors. I mean, I think we have somebody that has been sort of tried and true so far, has an understanding of what our needs are and of the process for summarizing the data for us. So from a personal standpoint, I wouldn't have any problem with continuing with CCSU unless others have other ideas or any objections to that. So if you do, I think this is your opportunity to go ahead and state that.
This is Scott Becker. Just curious, because I haven't heard any dissatisfaction with the way CCSU is doing it. Is that correct?
I have not dissatisfaction whatsoever.
Is there anyone on the SRC that is opposed to continuing with CCSU? Or has concerns about continuing with CCSU? Okay, I'm not hearing any. Brian, do you need any sort of a motion from us?
Yes, that we would need a motion.
Okay. So I think the motion that we're asking for is for the continuing contracting of services with CCSU to handle our customer satisfaction surveys, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
It would be called consumer satisfaction survey, but yes.
Gary Allen.
I'm sorry.
I'd like to make a motion that we continue using CCSU for our consumer satisfaction survey.
Okay, do we have a second?
Nate Barnes, second.
Thanks, Nate. Okay. All those in favor of continuing with CCSU to do our consumer satisfaction survey, say aye.
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 Okay. All those opposed? Okay. Any discussion? Okay. It sounds like the ayes have it. Thank you all for that. Brian, do you have everything you need from us on that?
I do indeed. Thank you.
Okay, sure. So the next topic on our agenda is the VR policy for personal adjustment programs. And Brian, do you want to set the table on this issue for everybody? And then I'm going to give the SRC members the opportunity to weigh in, and then the public the chance to weigh in after that.
Yes, the personal adjustment policy was taken up by the advisory board as well as the SRC, back in late 2017. At that point in time, the voc rehab program was rapidly approaching the need to implement an order of selection. Funds were very, very tight. Reallotment dollars had really gotten reduced from what had traditionally been the amount of reallotment dollars we had received. And both the SRC and advisory board recognized that this was a category where there were some relatively high expenditures, and the need to look at the policy and make some possible revisions, certainly not with the intent of preventing people from going for this service, but to make sure that those individuals that were going were making progress and that the services were of benefit, so that the individual came out of the programs with a likelihood of success in obtaining employment. So based on that, there were revisions to the policy that were proposed. There was a public comment period. There were no public comments received, and therefore the policy modifications were approved by both the State Rehab Council and the Advisory Board, and they became effective, I believe, in July of 2018. Since that point in time, we've had some opportunity to look at the data, and we have seen that there's been a rather significant decrease in the number of individuals that have participated in personal adjustment training. At an earlier meeting when this question came up, Mary Burgard correctly identified that a number of the vendors who had previously been offering personal adjustment training initiated other of residential training programs that had a stronger vocational work experience component. Those programs do not require the type of approvals to go beyond the 12 weeks of residential programming that this policy has. So it is possible that some of the individuals who may have in the past gone to personal adjustment training are now instead going to something that might be more of a career-based training that has some of the same components of residential adjustment, learning how to live independently. But this particular policy is based upon purely learning personal adjustment skills. And the policy itself does identify personal adjustment skills as personal habits, attitudes, and skills, which will enable the individual to function effectively with their disability, and that actually is the federal definition. However, in this policy, when we look at the requirements for an individual to get approval to stay at the residential program beyond the 12 weeks, it is only based upon the skills of the individual and what skills haven't been mastered. So we do have within this policy on this view a need to fix that, because you have the policy at the beginning saying that personal adjustment training is based on habits, attitudes, and skills, and yet extending beyond 12 weeks, the only criteria being identified, the criteria for considering an extension, is skills. So that is a concern. Another thing I have noticed is that this particular policy does require the state director to approve extensions beyond the initial 12-week period. Most of the other policies you'll find in the voc rehab policy manual only require the supervisor's approval. Now, there are some built-in requirements from the fiscal component, and any authorization over $5,000 does require the director's approval in addition to the supervisor's approval. That's the authorization. But the policy here itself is saying to go beyond the length of 12 weeks, the director has to do it. And perhaps it should be at the supervisory level where that would go. And then the third thing that has come out at me as a result of reviewing the resolution passed by the National Federation of the Blind of Connecticut and reading the concerns that they put in their resolution, which has been shared with the SRC membership, is that these programs have their own curriculums. Each program designs a curriculum based on what that program wants to teach individuals, and they determine the time frames necessary for them to provide that training. Some programs have like a 3-month training, some have a 6-month, some have a 9-month, some actually have a 12-month. But each program has a curriculum that they've designed that they feel is appropriate for their training approach in order to help a person who's blind achieve the goals of the personal adjustment training program. But this policy here really is treating them all in the same way. It says, okay, we'll do 12 weeks, and anything beyond 12 weeks, we'll do in 1 month authorization, and we need to see on a monthly basis what the skills are that they've acquired. So this was brought before the advisory board at their meeting last week, and the advisory board deliberated on it, and they have requested that I bring to the State Rehab Council their recommendation that they would like to hear what the State Rehabilitation Council proposes, and they would then subsequently like for me to draft a revision of this policy to bring before them for deliberation at their September meeting, incorporating into whatever draft I bring to them what the State Rehab Council believes should be considered. And obviously, the State Rehab Council at their September meeting would also need to deliberate on any potential modifications to the policy, and there would then need to be a public comment period where whatever revisions are proposed to the policy go out for a 30-day public comment period, and those comments would then be factored into what then would come before the SRC and the advisory board at a subsequent meeting to ultimately deliberate on approving or leaving intact, whatever their choices are, the personal adjustment training policy. So that's where I'll pause.
Brian, thanks for setting the table for us. So, correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like there are sort of three key areas for us to deliberate. The first being whether not just skills be considered in granting extensions beyond the 12 weeks, but that habits and attitudes also be considered. That's number one. Number two, the issue of the programs being approved not by the state director as they are proposing, but giving permission for the supervisor to make that approval. So that would be issue number two. And then issue number three being the possible elimination of that 12-week limit. Is that accurate in terms of the three key things that we should be deliberating?
Yes, I would agree that, yes.
Okay, so then I'd like to throw that out to the group, and Brian, feel free to jump in here with filling in any gaps that I'm leaving out. But in terms of the criteria for the 12-week extension strictly being based on skills only and not considering habits and attitudes, would any of you SRC members like to jump in on and weigh in on that?
Yes, this is Deb Reed. I would just like to say that taking into account the personal adjustment period, the attitudes and habits are so very important to the successful outcome of acquiring those skills. And I very much support going by progress reports, seeing how well the individual acquires the skills and makes that personal adjustment to determine the length of time at the center.
John Carnival.
Thank you for that comment, Deb. Sure.
Hello?
Yep, go ahead.
Sorry. So I just wanted to agree with that and say that habits and attitudes are hugely important, because you don't believe in something or you don't have the right viewpoint on it, you're going to struggle to learn anything, let alone succeed. So I would also like to say that I think that's very much worth a review to include.
Great, thank you for that comment. Anybody else want to weigh in on this?
Hey, Mike, it's Kendra. I'm just really echoing what everyone else is saying. It all starts with behaviors, you know, and back to the positive attitude, you know, just for anything that we do in success. So I would agree with the group here.
Great. Thank you, Kendra. And I agree with all three of you. Is there anybody on the call that feels differently and thinks that that the habits and attitudes should not be considered as a factor in the 12-week extension?
This is Lucretia Jones.
Sure.
Hello?
Go ahead, Lucretia.
What I heard, I'm in agreement with. I do believe in attitudes and habits. We need to go forward with those skills being acquired, and the progress reports do give something concrete to go by. So I'm in agreement of everything I've heard thus far.
Okay, great. Thank you. Would anyone else like to weigh in either in support of that approach or in opposition to that approach? Okay. Hearing no one, then I'm going to assume that the group, unless I hear any other opposition, that the group supports the idea of habits and attitudes being taken into consideration in addition to skills in granting extensions beyond the 12 weeks. So I think we've reached consensus on that. So I'm going to jump ahead to the second item that I had mentioned, the issue around the approval of the programs being granted by the state director versus the client supervisor. I think from my personal perspective, I think it's perfectly okay for that decision to be made by the supervisor. But I would like to open it up at this point for you guys to weigh in one way or the other, either in support of that idea or in opposition. So I'll open up the floor to any thoughts that you guys have.
John Cardamola here again. Is there any particular reason that we know of why it was originally designated solely as the director? Was there a goal behind that?
This is Brian. I believe the goal behind that was to stress the importance of the decision around authorizing additional funding at a time when the funding levels were so tight. As a footnote, subsequently, reallotment dollars have improved considerably from where they were at that time. So while dollars are always going to be a concern, back then, there was a very strong likelihood that the program was likely going to need to enter an order of selection, meaning that there would be individuals that would not be able to access services at all until funding became available. So it was, if this is going to be authorized, given the cost of this particular type of a service, that anything that was an extension beyond the 12 weeks would require the director to make that decision. I can only say that where policies require such a higher level, it's usually based on fiscal considerations.
So I guess you covered this a fair bit with your footnote there, and I appreciate it. So would it be accurate to say that the funding issue is not so much of a concern
so that if we were to give it to supervisors, that additional increase would be more easily handled now?
Hearing how you've asked the question, I want to be kind of clear that this was never about whether or not the supervisor has the skills or capabilities of making these decisions. So I think that this was saying that before the supervisor could even authorize and approve the authorization, the director had to first grant it. I think that that was not a reflection on whether this could be handled at the supervisory level. It was more a reflection of whether or not this cost was at such a high level that really the director should weigh in first. I would say from a standpoint to answer the second part of your question, clearly dollars will always be a concern, but we are not any longer projecting that an order of selection would be imminent. Fiscal projections we have certainly show adequate funding to get us through next federal fiscal year and the federal fiscal year following it, based on what we have available and what we know our base allotments are likely to be. So I would say that at least based on what we currently have in front of us, I don't personally believe this policy requires such a tight set of restrictions around it. And speak to the bigger concern, seeing that the number of individuals who participated in this type of training has dropped so substantially since the policy went into effect, I am hesitant to say that policy is effective, because I fear that the policy's new wording may have actually caused a chilling effect on the authorizing of the service. I said earlier that I believe that some of the clients who may have gone to personal adjustment training are now going to a vocationally related, career related residential training program, of which they're getting some personal adjustment training still provided to them. But this particular policy is intended to specifically address clients receiving personal adjustment training. And factually, it is appearing to be that the policy, some of the requirements to get extended, involve the director before it can even go forward, that it is possible that these requirements have resulted in some of the reasons for the reduced number of clients that have gone to these types of programs.
Okay, thank you for covering that. I do want to just say that my question was not intended to challenge the supervisors. I was focusing more on the cost angle and just being extra sure that we do have the financial stability to move forward with loosening the policy, and that obviously finance will always be a concern, but that it will not put us into a financial issue. So I appreciate you going over all that.
Great, thank you for those comments. Would anyone else like to weigh in on this issue in terms of whether the state director needs to have input or whether that approval can be granted by the supervisor? Okay, I'm hearing none. So based on the way you described the situation, Brian, it sounds to me like the SRC as a whole supports the idea of the supervisor being granted the authority. Is there anyone that feels differently before we move on? No. Okay. All right. Thank you all for that. That enables us to move on to the third point around the potential elimination of that 12-week time limit. Is there anyone that would like to weigh in on whether that should be maintained strictly, or whether we should recommend the elimination of that restriction?
So I'll open it up to you guys at this point to go ahead and weigh in.
I have a question. This is John McNichol. I thought I heard that the question to be addressed is what happens if you reach the 12th week? Trying to make the mechanics of this whole process work more effectively, you know, needing every month it has to be reapproved. Are we trying to eliminate the 12 weeks or just allow a more smooth process whenever it's appropriate?
Brian, do you want to respond to that question?
I would, in some regards, need to prefer that the SSRs for your perspective on that. I can say that the way the policy is presently written, before you get to the 12 weeks, at the 10th week, if the program believes the client needs to continue beyond the 12-week period, at the 10-week mark, they're to submit the report and the justification for why it will need to go beyond the 12-week period. So that basically gives the director 2 weeks to make an assessment and decision on whether or not to allow for beyond the 12-week period. And then it does require, bear with me one second, I just want to check the language. So at that point, if there needed to be additional extensions, we would need to see what that extension was. Because I'm looking at the policy now, it is not saying that then every single month they need to turn it, or what they need to say is the anticipated time required for the client to master these additional skills. So what it potentially would mean is that after they submit that report at the 10-week mark, they may, if the person has not acquired sufficient independent mobility travel skills, and we don't believe, based on the progress to date, they're going to acquire those skills within the remaining 2 weeks that we have, 12-week mark. We believe they need another 6 weeks, and here's what we're going to teach them in those 6 weeks, and here's how we're going to then provide you with proof that the skills were either mastered within those 6 weeks, or if they weren't mastered, why they weren't mastered, and what would need to be done to be a client to master those skills. So that's what this policy currently says. And my comments were based on the fact that programs have their own curriculum, and their curriculum is based on their experiences, based on their training approaches for how long it takes a client to achieve the skills, the attitudes, and the, I'm sorry, let me scroll up. Skills, the attitudes, and the work, and the personal habits that are necessary to, in essence, graduate from the personal adjustment training program. So I am just coming to the recognition that there are programs out there that say it takes 6 months, and we know it takes us 6 months. Well, they've already established it's a 6-month program. And this policy is saying, well, that's nice, it's a 6-month program, but we're only going to authorize 12 weeks. And if you want more than 12 weeks, you've got to provide information. In a way, I guess I can make the analogy of saying that if you want to get a bachelor's degree in order to become a, if you want to become a pharmacist, that's a 5-year program. Now, maybe if you work, you know, go through the summer, you can accelerate it. But to become a pharmacist, you have to take the following courses, and you have to succeed in courses. And it's the certifying body that says, if you want to be a pharmacist, this is what you need in order to become a pharmacist. And we're not coming in with our VR policy and saying, well, that's nice, it's a five-year program, but VR will only pay for 3 years. And if you want to go beyond 3 years, here's what we will need to see. We recognize that there's an entity that's developed that curriculum and that we're honoring their curriculum because they're the ones that teach pharmacy. And I